Welcome back to week four of Press Row, a TexAgs video feature and podcast breaking down the key storylines in Aggie football with the people who cover it most. Gabe Bach with you, along with Billy Lucci and Olin Buchanan is back here with TexAgs, OB. And Brent Zwerneman, nice cargo pants as well for the viewing audience. You might have to just lift a leg at some point along the way of the Houston Chronicle.
You know, that happens on my list.
Hey, it's week four. We're getting comfortable.
Hey, as a fellow father, I'm surprised you're ripping me on the cargo.
I'm surprised he's ripping you on anything style related.
Oh, yeah. No question about it.
The oversized sport coat that
that's right.
Stephen McGee still can't stop talking about.
And there you go. That's what I'm talking about. I like it. It's resourceful. Resourceful as a dad, no
doubt.
And speaking of fashion, once voted the best dressed sports writer in America, Slammin' Sammy Kahn of ESPN. Sam.
A little bit more casual today.
That's right.
With a fedora, though.
Ivy. It is an Ivy.
An Ivy. Casually Ivy.
Yes.
Is that what those are called?
Yeah, these are Ivies, yeah. Okay.
I love those hats, but there's some things that you just know don't look good on you, and that or a fedora or anything like that is in that room.
I would love to see Billy with a fedora. I just want to see what it looks like.
I'm surprised we haven't.
I'll come in with a fedora one week just to change it up.
That's great. Aggie's coming off a 38-point win over UL Monroe. The big story this week is the upcoming trip to Tuscaloosa to face number one Alabama. Let's look back briefly. We'll spend most of our time looking ahead. What are some takeaways? Brent, you want to kick us off? Takeaways from the 38-point win on Saturday.
You know, it was methodical. They didn't get off to the rough start, but, I mean, they had the slow start, slow 24-10 at halftime, right? But you saw something where they were persistent, kept after it. Next thing you know, and by the way, I guessed at 48-10 before the game.
I saw that.
Yeah. And at halftime, I said, okay, they're halfway there, and the other team has reached its max because the home team is mad now. And you saw the adjustments again at halftime under Mike Elko. The defense pitches a second-half shutout, and essentially they had reason to build confidence going into Alabama based on it.
I think this is a game where it's a really big test of where your team is mentally because you came off the big game against Clemson, emotional. You were right there. And you can't kind of let it up. And I think it's just human nature. They're 18 to 22-year-old kids. Things like this are going to happen. But if you're able to overcome it, which they were, I think it bodes a good sign as to where this team is mentally.
Yeah, and I don't think that was a bad team. I you know, we always have to be careful not to overhype these Sun Belt teams. I was sitting with a buddy of mine that knows football during that game, and he was going, this is a top five group of five offense they're playing tonight. And I said, after watching that game, that's not true. They're dangerous. They're dangerous at, now I would put North Texas in that category after watching them. So would John Chavis. But their quarterback is good. They've got a really explosive receiver and a couple of good receivers. They've got some talent in that backfield. That, to me, guys, was a trap game just by the between number two and number one. But it also, I think it was a trap from, you don't want to play these group of five teams on the year that they have an all-conference quarterback, player of the year candidate mm-hmm. that routinely has 400 and 500-yard games, or when they're a real veteran football team. And ULM was both. So it could have been, like you were saying, if they hadn't shown so much mental toughness there and focus, it could have been a more uncomfortable game than it ever was. I mean, the most uncomfortable it was 24-10 at halftime. They had gone down and scored, but you knew A&M's getting the ball. I thought they were going to come down and score on their first possession, but it was the second to put them away.
Yeah, you know, and we talked about the players maybe not being as intense, maybe not meaning to give a lesser effort, but it's a human nature thing. Mm-hmm. But I think the same goes for the coaches. And you know, no matter what they say, they're not as going to be as invested in a game like that. And I think the game plan was pretty vanilla again, and you would expect it to be. So when you go into a game saying, hey, it appeared that they were saying, hey, we want to establish run and boost our running game again. And it didn't take long for ULM to realize that's what they were going to do. So you're basically running against eight guys in a box on every play. So I think you know, the results were pretty predictable. And the fact that A&M goes out and wins the way they do, it doesn't make you feel better about A&M
chances
physically, I think. But it does tell you something, I guess, mentally, that they are more mental tough mentally tougher than maybe they've been in past seasons.
And I think it was real clear with that they were trying to not just get back to running the ball, but to work on it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that's better than any practice. And I think, you know, it's still – I wouldn't say it's an area of weakness because they were able to – you know, they had some success early against Clemson. They didn't put up big numbers, but I think they're working on things. We saw more of that Kellen Mond quarterback run game. That's not typical of Jimbo teams.
I was a little surprised by that just for the injury factor, the risk of injury, but it was obvious they really wanted to work on it, and he looked good doing it.
Or show Bama something.
I think people forget you don't have preseason games in college, so you have to work on this stuff early in the season to get it right.
Very interested, too, to see what does that look like moving forward, because Kellen Mond looked great doing it. Yeah. And when he tossed it, he was down there lead blocking against UL Monroe.
But he did,
and he's making such better decisions in the zone read game, when to keep, when to give, and then on the option, was that something just, I'm going to show this, make Bama have to work on it, or is this going to be a little wrinkle in this offense because he does such a good job?
I think you're going to see him run the football more as the season goes on by design. Which I just think it's too good a weapon.
Yeah.
You know, it's obvious why he won the starting job, but I think that was at the time and still is and will be moving forward a determining factor in why he won it, because he can do those kind of things for this kind of game that's coming up, not necessarily Northwestern State or whatever, but Clemson, Alabama, and some of the others, and now LSU.
Against Clemson, they ran, I remember, like a speed option or a power option when Kellen was under center near in the red zone. And that was one thing I think that surprised me most about Jimbo's offense, because there wasn't a big element of what they did at Florida State, especially when people think about Jameis. Jameis wasn't a runner. No. He was more of a statue. And so the quarterback run game was not a big element, at least statistically, in Jimbo's offense, but it's clear that he has built this offense and the way they're going to attack around Kellen's skills, which is the smart thing to do.
Yeah. I'll tell you something interesting. I watched the other night, and this is what I'll end up doing this time of year, is late night watching these, you know, watching SEC Network and trying to watch. Last night I watched North Texas and Arkansas.
At 3:30 in the morning.
Yeah, while I was writing the game review. But I was sitting there and I was watching, and it was just so happened to be the whatever year, Olin or Gabe, y'all could tell me, LSU versus Tennessee in the SEC title game, Nick Saban's second year at Bama when they beat Tennessee. Really interesting because you had John Chavis, and Tennessee was like John Henderson, who was the other
Albert
Haynesworth. Yep. But they were last in the SEC in third down defense, believe it or not. But LSU was Jimbo Fisher was the OC, and the quarterback was
Ryan Pearley.
No.
Well, it wasn't?
No, it started off.
So Jimbo went to FSU in 07.
So yeah, are you talking about Saban at LSU?
Yes.
Was it Ainge?
Second year at LSU.
It was Matt Mock because it started off Rohan Davey, and he got hurt, and Matt Mock came
Correct.
In. And I'm watching that, and they're actually doing some stuff running the quarterback because Matt Mock could do it like – you know, like Kellen can. So I think Jimbo's not been against it. I just don't think, like you said, he's had necessarily those quarterbacks. And then you mix in the Daryl Dickey factor, which I think all of us sitting here will never really quite know how big an impact he has on him. But, Brent, you talked about when you hear Dickey talk, it was really interesting.
Yeah, he's background. Right on top of it. Yeah, those combining those two has really been something to see, and we'll see it even more so moving forward.
Jimbo likes us to think that's a dinosaur offense, like you said, Sam, but he's actually evolved it a lot.
That was fun.
I think he wants to lull you to sleep with that's who they are.
We're doing dinosaurs.
A lot of new innovative stuff that's pretty interesting.
No, I mean, I remember going back to the first game, logging how many times they did pistol, how many times they went hurry up, and it's a lot more than you would think. There is some eye formation, but I think that first game, they had 53 snaps with the first team, and only 9 of them were in I formation, which is certainly more than it used to be.
Yeah.
But it's not like they're going I every time.
Yeah, they're
going
not Wisconsin.
Two tight every time.
Yeah. All 11 explosive plays Saturday were out of the shotgun or pistol.
Yeah, I mean,
I did think that was funny when Jimbo was all shucksing it. You know, we're a dinosaur, new Brock.
Yeah,
just kind of Lou Holtz.
New one running
no
pistol,
bit.
Buddy.
That was good. Speaking of Jimbo liners, it's Bama week now, facing Tua Tagovailoa and the most explosive offense Saban's ever had. a measuring stick for this team. But as Jimbo said in the presser today, in this league, if you get caught up on one team, there are about three more teams that will come up and tear your arms and legs off. But what a heck of an opportunity for Texas A&M. He had two weeks ago, and he's got number one in Tuscaloosa this weekend, guys.
I think it's his best Alabama team. They've had so many national champs. I think they've had better defensive teams, which is interesting. But with Tua, and they still probably have the best defense in college football. Maybe, probably.
It's like choosing between Miss USA's.
Yeah, it's just which year? Well, I mean, it is really
his best Alabama.
Well, the way
it seems like every year you hear that.
The way Candace did the pick six this week, you might want to go with that 0-1. 5-1. Yeah.
Maybe the 0-1. I mean, the 0-1.
So I think though it's his best. It's the most difficult team to beat that he's going to have.
Isn't it crazy what he does with just switching out coordinators and all these things? But there's one constant that stays the same, and it's Nick Saban. It's
there was
amazing.
So much coaching.
That every year we say this might be his best team, and like you said, I think this is, which is hard to believe.
That is the one thing that has impressed me the most about this team, is because if there was ever a time for them to have a down year, I thought this would be it. And we're still early, so I mean, who's to say how it plays out? But because of the coaching turnover, because of the turnover on both sides of the ball in terms of coaching staff, I thought that was going to make it difficult, because the more of his, you know, former assistants leak out into the league, the more, you know, copycats we're going to have, and more programs are going to look like yours, and you would think naturally that's going to close the gap. At the end of the day, it comes down to ball players, which they've got the most of. And I think what the best of, to what you were saying, this is the best quarterback he's had at Alabama.
No question. I mean, this is the guy that turned Blake Sims into a feared weapon. He turned
Coker.
Andrew Coker won a title. Yeah. You've got, you know, even McCarron still, I still think he was just a guy. But
and the backup isn't chopped liver either. Oh, in case something
really
happens to Tua, you know, you've got a guy.
Talk about quarterback
solid
running game.
And it doesn't look like this defense is quite as good as some of those vaunted ones, but they just held Ole Miss to a first play touchdown, and that's it in Oxford. That's pretty special.
That is pretty amazing, because there were those I read that actually felt like Ole Miss had a chance because of their array of receivers against an inexperienced secondary for Alabama, and then you get the one play and that's it. If Alabama plays anything close to the caliber of defense that we're accustomed to seeing Alabama have, with that offense that now has the legitimate passing threat, I don't know if anybody can beat them. Maybe Georgia, maybe Ohio State, but would you bet on anybody against them?
How does A&M, when you look at Bama, I've watched two of their three games. How does A&M put a chink in that armor? How does A&M get any kind of momentum against that team the way they were able to do against Clemson? Because I think, and I don't know where y'all come off on this, I don't think there's a whole lot of comparison between Alabama and Clemson. If Clemson's a 9 on a 1-10 scale, Alabama's an 11.5. I think they look so much more difficult to beat than Clemson did. Yep. I could find the matchups in that game, but here's what I'm going to say that doesn't sound weird. I think some of them are the same against Bama. I think they are a little questionable at safety. If you can get the same deal with Clemson, if you can get the time to attack them, which obviously Ole Miss did not. A&M was able to do that to Clemson with that great Clemson D-line. I think it's there. And I'm going to say what I said before Clemson. I don't think Bama's O-line is the best Alabama offensive line I've seen. I see Jonah Williams out there, but I don't think they're to that level that they've been. So there's my one matchup, I guess, is what I'm saying, is can Jimbo Fisher and Daryl Dickey draw up a good enough game plan to protect Trevor, maybe mask some of these blocking issues? Trevor just texted me. We're trying to get a guest for the podcast. And then
we all have Trevor on our minds.
And then can can the A&M defensive line win that half of the battle in the trenches?
Finally showed some signs of a pass rush, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, last week in terms of getting four sacks, I mean, I know it wasn't just dominating, but at least it was some semblance of that, because after the first game you would think they might have at least stumbled into one sack. They didn't.
Yeah.
They had the one against Clemson, and then finally they started kind of getting things rolling. They're going to have to pick it up in a big hurry for Saturday.
I like Elko versus Tua. I don't like anything versus Tua. I think he's great. If there's something interesting, it'll be Elko versus Tua. Louisville had no defense. Ole Miss is probably the worst defense in the SEC. Tua played against Georgia in that game. I mean, the big thing was he did throw, I think, pretty sure he threw a pick in that game and took that sack to make second and 26. I just want to see – I think he's a really smart football player, don't get me wrong. But I want to see in live bullets with what we've seen Elko do in the first three games, particularly against Clemson, in terms of schemes and blitzes and things. At least that's interesting. I want to see it.
It's funny you bring that up because people forget – this is only the fourth game he's really playing meaningful snaps in.
Yeah.
You know, because the college football national championship being the other one. I think for you, I agree. I think the defensive backfield safety you mentioned, that is the part where I think they haven't really been tested yet, where they've had to retool the most. Mm-hmm. So if I'm A&M, and this is where I think I saw Kellen the best when they played Clemson, was the off-schedule plays. Was rolling out. He had one that Cameron Buckley dropped in the back of the end zone comes to mind, where he rolled out and threw it off.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Those kinds of plays, if he can continue to make those kinds of plays on Saturday, I think that gives A&M at least a fighting chance.
Oh, let's get to your storyline.
That allows you to tire them out.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
It's the running game, but it's also making those big dudes up front chase.
Mm-hmm.
Screens, Kellen off schedule.
The teams that have beat Saban's defenses in the last 6-7 years have been the quarterbacks that can.
And let's not forget that Kellen did some really good things against Alabama last year.
Right.
And made it a pretty competitive game. He needed to take care of the ball a little bit better, but he was a freshman.
Oh, and Billy brings up great points about Elko, and this is undoubtedly the best defense that Tua's faced this year, okay? But the back end is a concern right now.
Yeah, especially the cornerback play. I mean, A&M's given up a bunch of big plays. What was it, back-to-back 30-yard completions toward the end of the half. And, you know, their cornerbacks have gotten beaten pretty consistently. And that's against receivers that aren't as good as Alabama's. Now, I realize last week they probably were playing in man coverage all the time, or almost all the time, and they're not going to – they're going to show different coverages and try to confuse Tua and just give the corners – more help, but there are going to be times that they're going to be one-on-one. Is Tagovailoa going to realize that? Is he going to see it? Are they going to test those A&M corners? I would. And is those A&M corners going to be able to hold up? And just based on what I've seen so far, I would have to be pessimistic about that.
Can we all agree that's the biggest concern on the team right now?
Yeah. Because
big plays?
Or the old staples were the secondary and the offensive line, and I would say now the secondary seems like it's taken over that role as the biggest concern. Obviously, still some concerns on the other line, but yes, I would number one.
I think given the way the pass protected against Clemson, I still have my questions about them because of the way they played against Clemson, I wouldn't feel as concerned as the way the secondary.
I agree, and on the big play front too, I think. It's not just the secondary, but that's certainly the root of it, you know. And I love the way Davion Renfro's played so far. You haven't really seen or heard much of him. And it's, you know, I want to see Clifford Chapman get back and let them battle it out and say, let's put the two best on the field. Or if Chuck Oliver is having a rough game early, do you put Chapman in and change it up with the big 6'4" plus corner out there? They don't have that option right
Chapman's
now.
Chapman's got to be champing at the bit, too. And the poor guy's like the Courtney Davis of defense right now
point,
you know, in terms of not getting on the field when he's obviously a guy who has a load of potential who just hadn't seen it yet.
Yeah, right. I would like to see him back there. And, you know, at safety, I've been really, really impressed with the return of Donovan Wilson.
Yeah.
And if he doesn't take a couple bad angles, he's terrific at disguising and timing the blitz. He always has been, but everyone on the A&M defense is doing that now, whether it's Caper Smith, whether it's Oliver. So obviously they're doing a good job of coaching the timing and the disguise of that, but no one's better than Dono. He took a couple bad angles against Clemson, or he might have like four sacks through three games. But I've been really impressed with him. I think, you know, Tucker and Oliver are guys that are going to be tested, and no one will do a better job of leveraging, you know, exerting pressure on those weaker spots than Nick Saban will. And you can bet after watching last week, and they're going to try to get outside leverage and get the corner on some of these runs, which even ULM was able to do.
You mentioned it before. Jimbo has talked about it too. It isn't all just on them. They've got to get consistent pass rush, because yep. You can't have your guys out there covering for 5-6 seconds. It's just not going to happen.
Not so against Jerry Judy.
No, gosh.
I liked Landis Durham's disposition at the weekly press conference about when asked about getting a sack, and he said, "You don't see this guys too often." He said, "Well, it wasn't really a sack. I mean, he kind of ran out of bounds, you know."
Yeah. He's like, "I want to hit
somebody. I'm claiming that sack." Yeah. He's like, "No, he'd rather get a sack the traditional way."
Yeah.
I thought that was a pretty cool approach mm-hmm. to it.
Billy, you mentioned injury and Chapman coming back could help this team. Speaking of an injury, maybe the biggest concern for this week yeah. specific is what happens at the center position.
Right? Yeah, that's my talking point this week, because I just think the most significant thing to come out of Jimbo Fisher's press conference today was his optimism that they were going to have Eric McCoy back. And even more than getting him back, saying that he'd probably return to practice tomorrow, that's big, because a lot of times with these guys that have played a ton of football, and this may end up still being the case, we don't know yet, but they might not come back till about sometime around Thursday because, oh, you know what he can do. But that tells you that, you know, it's way more significant than if he came back on a Tuesday. That also, I still say practice matters. I think with Myles Garrett, or his junior season, we didn't see that same Myles Garrett because he never got that 2 weeks off. He kept playing, but he wasn't really practicing. And I think it showed a little bit in his performance, where he could have been just the most dominant player in the league.
Especially at a position like center, where, all goes through you in terms of snaps and timing and everything else.
Center and against Bama, and he's by far, I think, your best lineman.
Yeah.
And he's right in the middle of it, and you're playing the worst team you probably want to play with weaknesses up front. But at the same time, guys, you have to err on the side of caution with a guy like this, because you might lose to Bama anyway. You need Eric McCoy to go and, you know, if you want to fight for, like, a winning record in this league this year, or to get to whatever you're going to get, you got to do it. Eric McCoy's got to be a part of that.
Maybe that's who Jimbo was talking about when he talked about having his arms and legs torn off. Eric, you know, might need him down the road, not just for Alabama.
And the zero knows, here comes another guy through the turnstile this year in Quinnen Williams. He got, what, three tackles for loss against Louisville. He's got four this year.
But could put you out there, and their defense would be pretty good.
I think Eric's a guy who had experience playing at Alabama
good
as
point.
Well. Mm-hmm. That's a big key.
I think that can't be overvalued. And also, when you get into an environment like that where it's so loud, I mean, the communication is such a big thing. And he doesn't have as much responsibility as he had in the past because Kellen's going to handle pass pro. But when it's a run play and things are going on up front, you've got to have a veteran in that situation in Bryant Denny. That's what you want. You don't want to have to put in someone who's a little bit more green into that situation.
Yeah, and he's played against their defense for 3 years.
Right. And for all the experience and everything else, if he can go, though, you want him out there because Eric – McCoy may be the one guy out there that's tougher than anybody he's going against. And I don't care how tough the other guy is. And he can go in there and set a tone for the other guys around him and say, this is how it's going to be. And I don't know that you go in there with that, obviously without the same confidence, but just with maybe the same demeanor without Eric.
I would say he's one of the three most important players on this team in terms of who you can't afford to be without. Maybe four, you throw Dotson in on defense, but I mean, him, Travion, Kellen, I mean, he's that big a deal. To me, that was the most significant thing said today, was that we're hoping he'll be out. You know, I don't know if he said hoping or expecting, but they feel like he'll be practicing tomorrow. When he went down, guys, raise your hand if you thought that's a season ender and a pretty devastating one at that. That was going to be really bad if that happened in the fourth quarter against ULM. Not that they shouldn't have been out there. because you're about 5 minutes into the fourth quarter. I don't think that was an issue at all, but you're just like, oh, man, are you kidding me?
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen a coach more eager or happy to share the news that a guy has a light sprain and that he should be able to go.
True.
Because Jimbo Fisher seemed relieved to even give us that news.
Yeah.
Brent, what do you have for us?
You know, I was going to zero in on special teams because when they said Daniel LeCamera was out, and you're saying, man, how long? What's going on here? It didn't look good when he had the cart with him. And then Seth Small, a guy who was at, Katy High School a year ago, gets out there and just kicks the dog out of the ball. I mean, had just a really powerful leg, looked good doing it, looked calm. And so I thought that was also a sigh of relief, obviously, because you're probably going to play some close games in the SEC.
For sure.
And you need that kicker, and LeCamera had the experience, and last year was steady as can be. But it looks like there's not going to be much of a drop-off at all with Seth Small. And then I love the 78-yard return by Terrell Dodson. You know, and he described at the press conference how he heard someone – he was trucking it down the line, and he heard someone breathing heavy behind him. And so he's like, oh, I'm about to get tackled. And he looks up, and he goes, oh, it's Buddy Johnson. I'm good.
I told him he looked tired. He said, no, I wasn't tired. He's like, he saw the thing. Because he almost crawled to a stop when he got to about the 10.
And I think my favorite part of the post-game press conference was Daylon Mack describing how, well, you know, they tell me I'm one of the shorter guys, so I'm not supposed to even stick his hand up. The idea is just get pushed for the taller guys. He goes, but he couldn't help himself. He stuck that hand up, and he ends up with a blocked field goal.
And he noticed the first one. He goes, man, if I just lifted my arm, I'd have had the block.
Well, I said that on the first one because I was – you know when you're right there, when we're down there on the sideline and you're looking perpendicular to it, I mean, you could just see that push on the inside. I said, dude, Daylon almost blocked. Because you don't think of Daylon.
Right.
You think maybe like a Jaden Peavy or somebody. But he almost got the first. He damn sure got the second one.
That's your guy.
He said his coaches probably wouldn't be too mad at him about that.
Yeah.
Going ahead and sticking that hand up.
That's your guy who'll be on the recovery, too.
Yeah, you know, I'm surprised that he was saying that he was tired or whatever. I mean, that guy played running back down at Centennial High School in Franklin, Tennessee. Looked like he's running for one of those touchdowns against Ravenwood. You know,
he's appealing to the Texas Tennessee.
And there's a few out there.
There's no right. Oak Ridge reference or Kentner Logan.
Yeah, that's right.
But, you know, you were talking about Seth Small, and I don't think you can overstate that to have a guy that come in because there are going to be close games. And I think we've already seen one game where, you know, better kicking could have been the difference in a win. So to have a guy come in, we haven't seen it yet. I assume he has the 50-yard range. But I've always said that's a luxury. Give me a guy that can make it 40 in and be reliable. I'll take that every time. And he comes in as a freshman and knocks him down, knocks all six extra points. I don't know how long Daniel's going to be hurt, but – at least for one game, you know, that guy gave you all
doesn't
the...
sound good.
Yeah, it doesn't
when you say it was a crack in the foot, that doesn't sound good.
You know, but if you don't want that to happen in all-conference Canada, but if it is, happen at home before UL Monroe, work out whatever, you know, get on the field
I'll tell you this, and you might be familiar with them because, you'll go cover high school in the Houston area and recruiting and stuff. The thing about Seth Small that you always heard is at Katy High School, he was the first in line for sprints and wanted to lift more than anybody. And they got two of them now with him and Braden Mann. But Seth is a guy who has he's a football playing dude that's a kicker. And
thanks, RC.
Yeah, exactly. I think 15 of them. But he's a kicker that's a football player, and I like that in the mentality of being able to step in and not be fazed by any of this or on the road. And the other thing you know about Seth Small, if you followed him at all, and even in camp, I mean, we all saw it. There's no one on the program with a bigger leg on field goal kicking than Seth. So he does. He has that 50, I think he's got that 55-yard range. The question is going to be the consistency and stuff, but I like his mental makeup. And damn, if you're going to give me a two-kick sampling, hitting him right down the middle, and that ball explodes off of his foot.
Yes, it does. It looks different.
Listen, when you play at Katy High, you do get to play at NRG Stadium. You do get to play at AT&T Stadium. So you do get to have some experience in these kind of venues. I still think for the true freshman, it will be interesting to see because you're going on the road. This is, you know, it's a little bit of a different animal. But at least he does have some kind of big venue experience. Mm-hmm. And then on the flip side to what you had said, I think it happening at home and him, it's better if it happens here rather than him having to be run out there in the middle of that the Alabama game.
Yeah.
I think so you know, get the nerves a little bit, you know, out of the way early on and then see what happens. I think the other thing on special teams that will be really critical for this is the punting game. And I thought we saw, you know, it was really, really good against Clemson. And I thought, you know, they would have flipped the field a couple of times. And I think in a game like this against a team like this, that is absolutely critical.
You know, I like Dan kicking off because, you know, just kick it out of the end zone.
Heck
and
yeah.
I don't have to worry about some of those fast guys, especially like when they play South Carolina later this year.
Debo. Well, Marcus like Green's that. As good as
just
a lot of those
of
dudes. Marcus Green is as good as a lot of the dudes in the SEC they're going to kick. And you know what they did? He got, what, one return?
No.
You had to tackle him one time in that game, in the return game, when you scored 48. Braden Mann is a hell of a weapon. If Seth Small... The return game has been, they have, you know, there's not that many kickoff returns anymore, but I think Rashad Paul's been good as a punt returner. He looks comfortable.
He looked more steady this past week, like more and more comfortable. And that's something, speaking of RC, remember he used to tell us that the hardest thing to do in football was catching a punt. And I believe it. I mean, and it seems like with more and more experience and game time experience, he's gotten more comfortable.
Sam, why don't you take us home with what it means this Saturday?
You know, to me, again, just like the Clemson game was, this is a measuring stick game. And so a lot of the guys I talked to, I want to know, how close do you feel like you are? I think we all know it will take time to get to where they want to be because this is the standard-bearing program. This is where Texas A&M wants to be. This is why you spent $75 million to hire Jimbo Fisher to get them to that level. It's probably going to take some recruiting classes and some time to get there. But and Jimbo said it to the team after the game that he felt – they're pretty darn close, at least from an on-field standpoint and the way they competed. So if you can show that kind of competitiveness on Saturday against Alabama again, regardless of result, I think you got to feel pretty good if you're A&M.
Yeah, if they can – and then I'm not saying they have to take it to the final play. And obviously we know they're going there to win. And because of Clemson, they will have confidence that they can go out there. There are guys on this team like Eric McCoy that led Alabama in the second half the last time they were there. You know, Kellen Mond made plays against that defense in the fourth quarter to make things interesting. So they're not going to be scared to go in there and win a football game. Now, actually doing it, they're complete opposites. But if they can play competitive football game with the way everyone's talking about Alabama right now, and if that game's in any sort of doubt, even entering the fourth quarter, even in this, and I'm not saying set your standards that low, but even in the second half, I think the narrative on A&M is going to strengthen even more than it did after Clemson. That hey, Jimbo Fisher has this thing; it is going to happen. It's going to happen really soon, and that's going to be the national narrative coming out next weekend if they can do that.
You know, and it might not matter in the end, but I do think it. It makes a little bit of a difference, at least, with it being an afternoon game as opposed to a nighttime game with A&M playing its first game on the road. And we've talked all year, all September, about Kellen Mond's disposition and his calmness under pressure and everything. And I think that's also going to be a big factor because he does have that type of disposition, and that really comes in handy in a setting like this.
Mond versus Tua. And if it's tight, I wouldn't put it past the sucker. I mean, he's been really, really good, Kellen Mond.
Not at all. No, and I will tell you that I think of all the things that happened against Clemson, that was what impressed me the most, was not necessarily just Kellen Mond's progress as a player, but how tough he was.
Yeah.
How many times he stood in the pocket and took a shot and delivered the ball accurately. When I talked to Jimbo this offseason, we were talking about quarterbacks. He said, I want my guys to be aggressively intelligent.
Yeah.
That's exactly what Kellen was against Clemson. He didn't make any real dumb mistakes, and he didn't play scared. He stepped up and took his licks and made some plays. And I think that's all you can ask for. And when you got a guy like that calling the shots in the offense, it gives you a fighting chance.
Can we real quick before we go? And by the way, here's a little X factor that we haven't discussed. I don't know how big. It's just interesting. You know, A&M's. This is their first road game of the year. Something very different than anything I've ever covered on a football team. They'll be going out to Tuscaloosa on Thursday. That's what they did at Florida State. That's what they're going to do here. A&M will now travel to road games on Thursday.
So it's not just Tuscaloosa, it's all road games.
Every road game, yeah.
Okay.
So that's
interesting.
That's an interesting. I mean, I don't know For the players, it'll be something different anyway.
Well, polar opposite. So. The previous coach, they didn't even visit the stadium.
Yeah. Right? So, anyway, that's just a little interesting nugget.
So
yeah.
Two nights in a hotel, mm-hmm. you know.
I think that their deal is they like to get them out there. I think they bring tutors and, I don't know, they bring professors, but they bring, like, the tutors with them. And they
now, that'd be
bring
them off.
Something. Yeah, they have, like, their...
Your boss will be attending the class because he's with the football
team. That might make them a little bit more nervous than anything.
Yeah, yeah. That's right. But they have, like, I guess, you know, academic periods on Friday, whatever it is they do. So, anyway, what I want to say, though, Kellen Mond, I think it's been fascinating to see head coach and quarterback and this kind of how fast this thing has come together where you can tell, like, Jimbo, he said it a couple of times. I mean, he is really enjoying coaching Kellen. And I think there's probably a pleasant surprise just in how much Kellen's absorbing. Forget about how he's playing, which I think goes without saying. Even the head coach has to be like, he said it. He's like, wow. I mean, he's doing – but even just the whole – thing of a coach that – and you did that long story on him, that coach that's that intimately involved with his quarterbacks and teaching them every little intricacy about the game. And I bet when he got here, coming in, I bet there was a negative connotation. Because remember, there was some holdover on the coaching staff for a month or so. And I'm just saying, human nature, if – you're trying to sit there and explain why you didn't win a bunch of games and you're trying to keep your job on that staff, which some of them did not. But I think probably it was some underselling done on Kellen Mond. Mm. I believe that. I think that would be the norm would be, well, you know, we had to go with a freshman quarterback for half the season. And I think Jimbo Fisher's probably like, wow, this guy is so much beyond what I was – told he was coming in.
And I think from Kellen's perspective, he's figured out that when Jimbo Fisher quits grinding on him and is not in his face, that's when he should be worried.
Yeah,
you know, he's figured out that it's tough love, and that's a huge part of it.
Well, I wonder if, first of all, if Jimbo Fisher doesn't look at Kellen and say, you know what, this is the most athletic quarterback I've had. We've talked about how Jameis was a good passer, not that athletic. I don't know about E.J. Manuel or some of those guys, but
Ponder.
Just
– or the aforementioned Matty Mock.
I would probably say more than Matty. But the way he moves around. And then the temperament that you talked about, I mean, the guy never gets rattled, it seems like. And then when you add into it, apparently he's a guy that's – a sponge that wants to learn. And so if you're a coach and say, hey, look what I've got to work with, and oh, by the way, he's so coachable too, absolutely he's enjoying it. And you know, I think that's why you're seeing all the, you know, the fruits of that already.
All right, boys, excellent. We wrap it up? We take care of it?
I think so.
You got it.
I mean, we're not going to do predictions, so we don't do that here. I'll be interested. I just want to really see – can they take this team into the fourth quarter in Tuscaloosa?
Yeah.
We've been there before when you felt that 100,000. They go from singing Dixieland Delight to just puckering up. We've seen that happen before. It would be pretty amazing to see it happen again. But, man, they look like an absolute juggernaut.
That was my measuring stick for Clemson for them was – Is the result in doubt going into the fourth quarter? If it is, I think that's a successful outing. Quick note I'll leave you with. In the AP poll era since 36, only five teams have played two top four teams, or top two teams, I should say, number one and two, in the first 4 weeks of the season.
Okay.
Three went winless, and two others went 1-1. And this is the first time since 1989 that a team will have faced number one and number two in the first 4 weeks.
Great
of the season.
Tidbit, because I've been wondering that, but I haven't done the research. I would just say.
Thanks, ESPN Stats and Info. Thanks
Thank
for that
you.
One.
I like that. Very good. We need that database.
I know, right?
The password.
There you go.
For sure. All right, guys, that's fun.
Yeah, go ahead and tell that password now.
yeah, that's right. Nobody's watching anyway. All right, appreciate everybody. Again, you can subscribe, rate, comment. We'd love to have you on iTunes and all major podcast players. You can watch this if you're a premium subscriber on TexAgs.com, TexAgs.com/subscribe. We'll be back next week to break down Bama, look ahead a little bit to Arkansas. That's going to be an interesting
You don't
one
have C stuff this week.
Well, apparently, yeah, Luch was already looking ahead to Arkansas watching that game.
I'm looking past Bama. I'm studying tape of Arkansas.
You know, hey,
I'm doing
Sam,
advanced scouting.
I'm sorry, but this is a tradition on this side.
Press Row Podcast and video on TexAgs.com.
All right.